I am the secretary for the group Nerds United in Erie.
The big part was just being able to get to know more people that are into the things that I'm into. For me, video games, anime, PC gaming, well, technology in general. And it just gives me more of a social outlet compared to what I had before, which was actually very little. So yeah, our 1 year meetup that was canceled. Also, I was waiting to hear back on a couple IT positions, but then things happened and HR departments went silent. So I'm still doing my Lyft and Uber right now, and that is understandably super slow right now. So gets me a little on edge, making sure I have enough money to pay for bills and stuff like that, but yeah. So, it's Saturday. Been out for a couple hours. It's been extremely slow. I don't have any masks at the moment. I'm hoping for a couple good days here and there so that I can hopefully purchase a couple reusable ones. I don't have a set schedule. I try to aim towards a certain amount, and usually I can do that, but then there are some times when I let it get to me a little too much, and then I'm just like, I can't do this anymore, and then I just sign off and go home, and come home and try and do something to boost my mood. Good day, world. It's Tuesday, April 14th. I actually did pretty well. Had a nice long trip to and from Edinburgh. Had a gentleman who needed to get some food and clothing and such. So actually had my roommate as a passenger yesterday. And she brought me a bottle of water, some M&Ms, and a thing of Jell-O. It made me smile. It was a nice gesture. As far as community, and it doesn't just apply to Erie, it applies everywhere. Don't isolate yourself. Don't keep yourself from loving the things you love. Try to find the people that you connect with. Your emotional and mental health are going to thank you for it. It's absolutely worth the energy, even if it's hard to do. And it's such a great morning here in Erie. My roommate was able to obtain a mask for me. It's a little small. Fogs up my glasses a lot, but it'll be something until I get the other ones that I've ordered.
Our first interview, it was great. I felt really good about it and everything. And then just afterwards, my mood just went downhill. I don't know why. That's the fun part of depression. It just does things you can't explain, and it's a hassle.
I'm here before bed. It just wasn't a good mental day for me. I've been out driving every single day in one capacity or another for the last few weeks, so I think I need to take the weekend off and just relax and unwind and just regain my composure and, okay. I'm gonna get to bed. I gotta be up in the morning, so. Good night.
I said the rest of the week wasn't too bad. The whole stimulus thing from the IRS came in. I started to feel immediate relief. I already got my bills immediately paid up for the month. So yeah, I just decided I needed to stop, take a break, and get myself back together and then be able to go back at it on Monday. So, before everything started going down, me and a few friends, we would every Saturday night go up to round one and just go have fun, play games, have dinner, and just talk for a few hours. I don't have that now. I'm just hoping people can, you know, actually pay attention to what those that are far smarter than them are saying to help us get through this thing quickly, because I want to go back to my normal Saturday night routine.
What are we doing with our bread? Are we staying silent and supporting those systems of oppression?
In early June, 24-year-old Amari Abreu was in front of a crowd of protesters in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, calling for racial justice.
See, I found out something amazing about George Floyd when I was doing my research about him.
More than 2 months later, Abreu and others are still pushing for concrete change in the city of 26,000, not necessarily in the streets, but in the now virtual halls of local government. One major obstacle, they say, is representation.
Lebanon is almost majority of Hispanic, but yet we do not have any type of Hispanic commission in the city.
Most government leaders in the city and county are white. Abreu and others say they aren't doing enough to uplift the whole community.
When people in power have the ability to empower other people, but they don't do that, that's an issue.
Since George Floyd's death, newly energized activists like Abreu are teaming up with those who have been wanting change for a while. They held an anti-racism seminar, and co-facilitator Amanda Davis Bowie says more than just the usual suspects are listening.
I'm 50-50 with it. I think that you have a nice amount of people who come to check a box and say, I did this, so I'm good. And then I think that we have people who come because they literally want to know, they want to learn.
Davis Bowie, who is Black, is a psychotherapist. She says these trainings can push attendees past what she calls white dissonance.
So even if they are sitting there to check a box, it's going to be impossible for them to participate and not have some type of aha moment.
Most of the people who attended the virtual workshop were white, and that included the mayor and police chief. Davis Bowie wishes even more local decision makers would have been there.
They're the ones who sit in the back office and say, okay, well, this is what we're going to do, and this is how it's going to happen. Those are the ones that I really want to reach. Those are the ones I need to make sure that you have a clear understanding. Because the thing is, you can't fight a battle if you don't understand what the issue is.
One of the leaders the seminar seemed to especially reach was Amy Keller, the city's lone Democratic council member.
As a white woman of privilege, you know, I wasn't always aware to some of those things that were brought up, so it opened my eyes.
Out of the seminar, Keller became a key ally in pushing for the police transparency many activists were seeking. Keller honed in on trying to get the city's police manual to review use of force restrictions. This was from June.
First, I have to know what the policies are, so we can't really do anything without being able to review them. So I'm just trying to get access to them right now, which is a first step, but it's a little difficult getting going here.
Keller had to file a right-to-know request to get the document. She says putting scrutiny on the police force has meant stepping out of her comfort zone.
We donate to the police, and we really respect them, and, you know, I drive by and I wave to them, and lately I've been getting glares. They know who I am, and they know what I've asked for, and I feel like they're not happy, but I wish they would understand that it's not because I have an issue with the job they're doing, myself personally, but I've heard from people of color in the community who say that they do feel as though there are racial biases.
After 2 weeks, the city posted the policies, and it became a starting point for a more detailed conversation about policing in Lebanon. Around the same time, the mayor released a statement promising new annual trainings for police, among other points. The mayor and police chief did not respond to requests for interviews. Amanda Davis Bowie says these recent steps are a start, but she'd like to see more serious commitment.
I personally think they're pacifiers. That's how I feel about it. So, yeah, we did it. We did what you wanted, so now leave us alone. Like, that's the feel behind it. I think actions speak louder than words, even the words that are posted online.
For Amari Abreu, getting the police handbook was a minor victory, but he plans to keep pushing.
Hello.
And he's already on to the next thing. This is Abreu making his way down a long line of cars at an outdoor food distribution and COVID testing site in Lebanon that doubled as a voter registration drive. Abreu himself can't vote. He moved to Pennsylvania 5 years ago from the Dominican Republic, and he's in the process of applying for citizenship. But he now signs on to online council meetings every month, bringing up everything from local art to housing code enforcement.
Yeah, it's just fun, to be honest, if I'm honest with you.
He says he's most interested in setting an example for how more people can become engaged.
We have the front thing that we're trying to tackle, right? Like, let's get the policies. But reality is it goes deeper than that. You know, like, who's watching? Who's getting inspired? Who may have the resources that now, like, they're like, whoa, like, these people are working on this. We want to help them. We want to empower them.
It was in a refugee camp where Bella Tambe Malongo's parents met. They had both fled the Democratic Republic of Congo. They told her about it later.
They're like, we're going to be here for, I think, for life, you know? We might as well get married and stuff since we love each other.
Bella Tambe was their first child, born as a refugee. She felt like a nowhere person.
You had a starting point where you're like, you know what you were doing. You know this is home. This is where I belong. But as for us as refugee children, we don't belong anywhere, no? We don't. It's just run.
Bella Tambe spent the first 9 years of her life moving from camp to camp in Tanzania.
The second refugee camp that I was in, which was, I think that was the worst one. I did not like it. It was caged. There was like a whole fence. We weren't allowed to go outside. All we had to eat was peas and, I don't know if you know fufu. It's like a type of bread.
Pretty much the only good thing about that place was that she had access to a TV.
You know, we would all tune in to one channel. I think it was a channel from the Philippines.
The family kept moving. They waited to hear if a country would take them in. Then one day, they received a letter. It was an update on their case.
And my dad just told me, this paper is going to either, it's going to decide your future, basically. Whether you're going to be a United States, you know, resident or not. And I remember us just holding on to the paper for 2 days, not opening it, because we were so scared.
Eventually, they turned to a neighbor, a man from Kenya, to help them translate the letter.
So we took it to him and he said, you guys are going to the United States. You know, you have been accepted. It was the happiest moments ever. I mean, we don't know where we're going, but we know it's going to be better.
Where she ended up going was Erie, Pennsylvania. She's lived there for more than 10 years now. She's doing well. She's studying at Gannon University, and if you visit Erie, you can see her face on a big banner in downtown, encouraging people to complete the U.S. Census.
That's what I would say. Simply, it's home. We're rebuilding Erie, and I want to be there throughout the whole process. I want to be part of it, and I want to contribute to it. So I'm going to always be here.
But stories like Bella Tambe's are becoming less common in Erie. It's a city that struggled for decades as many manufacturing jobs left. And as the city tries to reinvent itself, it has embraced new Americans for a couple of different reasons.
To me, it taps into Matthew 25, whatsoever you do for the least of your people, that you do for me.
Joe Hawes is the CEO of Catholic Charities Counseling and Adoption Services in Erie. Up until recently, the agency was one of two in Erie that resettled refugees, helping them transition during the first few months in a new country.
Many of them would have loved to have gone back home. There is no home to go back to.
During the Obama administration, the number of new refugee arrivals in Erie reached nearly 800 a year, but that dropped to less than 150 under President Trump. Hawes says his group stopped resettling refugees because of the low numbers.
Our agency has been on what we consider to be temporary pause.
The agency's refugee program used to have 7.5 full-time employees. Now it has 2, who are still working on long-term assistance for refugees already here or resettled by another agency. Hawes hopes Catholic Charities in Erie can eventually start resettling refugees again. But he worries that if numbers stay low for too long, the whole system for resettling refugees will suffer significant damage. That's because to resettle refugees, you need employers ready to hire them, landlords ready to rent to them, interpreters ready to help with the transition, and more.
The concern is that all the bridges and roadways of refugee resettlement are being blown up to try and destroy the refugee resettlement system that was in place in the United States.
One other agency in Erie still resettles refugees, the International Institute of Erie. Delana Graysinger is the executive director.
As those things become dismantled, it's going to be harder for communities like Erie to build. Refugees and immigrants are the only growing population, and without that, towns like these become dying towns.
The head of the local Chamber of Commerce made a similar point when I spoke to him. Erie needs people. There are a couple of ways to see the economic impact of refugees in this city. A lot of refugees end up working at jobs that don't require a lot of specific skills or training, like at plastic manufacturers.
We had a high number of temporary employees on second shift and a huge turnover. Most people wouldn't last 2 weeks.
Chris Yoakum is vice president of manufacturing for Erie Molded Plastics. He says the company has worked with the Benedictine Sisters of Erie for years to hire refugees for jobs that start at about $10.50 an hour.
Quickly changed one of our worst performing shifts into one of our best performing shifts.
Yoakum has noticed the decline in new refugee arrivals, and he says it's been a huge blow.
When people don't show or we don't have those positions filled, we have to shut machines down. So the issue we're having now is that it's pushing us into working more weekends. It's pushing us to have late orders.
There is another way to see the impact in Erie.
We call it McDo's. It's eggplant stuffed with walnut and hot pepper.
It's at places like this, Sham Market.
With olive oil. It's very popular in Syria. People, they love it here too.
Bassam Daba opened the business in 2017. To pick up Middle Eastern groceries and other goods for the store, he drives to Detroit once a week. It's a 10-hour drive round trip, and he does it in one day. It's worth it, though.
When people, they will come here and they find what they need, this is really, it's a good feeling. I mean, you are serving them.
Refugees have opened dozens of businesses in Erie, sometimes breathing new life into vacant properties. Bassam came to the United States in 2009. He was used to living in big cities, Damascus in Syria, Amman in Jordan. Erie seemed too small at first, but he changed his mind.
I love it. I love it. Like, I tried to relocate. Honestly, I went to Chicago. I went to New York, Washington, D.C. There is a secret here. I had to come back here.
Still, he worries about the decline in new refugees. There's his market to consider.
I would be doing fine for one more year if there is no more like coming in. But after that, if things happen, I may close.
And he also worries for people who have fled their homes and aren't getting a chance to find a new one.
In a cramped office in the affluent Trexler Park area of Allentown, campaign signs for local candidates and President Donald Trump make the small space even tighter.
Whenever they come in full, I take their picture because I think it'll be cute. You know,
staff and volunteers warmly greet Tim Ramos, vice chair of the Lehigh County Republican Committee, as he enters the headquarters. Ramos claims Democrats have lied to black and Latino voters. To him, one of the biggest and widespread lies is that Republicans are inherently racist.
Every Republican's a racist. Every Republican hates minorities. Meanwhile, the fathers of slavery, the Democrat Party. Fathers of segregation, the Democrat Party.
Pennsylvania is a fiercely competitive battleground state in this election. Just over half of Allentown is Latino. And while Latinos more often register as Democrats, like everybody else, they are not a monolith. Many have deeply conservative beliefs. A significant portion of President Trump's Latino support comes from Cuban Americans who are traditionally conservative. And in states like California, for example, around one in three Latinos identify as conservative. Ramos says that there are plenty of Latinos in Allentown who are going to vote for Trump, some of them a second time.
People are calling us. Latinos and blacks are calling us and saying, hey, I'm tired of hiding. I want a Trump sign. I think that's a statement. I'm tired of hiding. I want a Trump sign.
For too long, Ramos says, Democrats have been in control of urban areas and Allentown in particular. He ran an unsuccessful mayoral campaign in the city last year, losing the special election by a wide margin to Democrat and former interim mayor Ray O'Connell. He takes the position that a Republican vote in Allentown is a vote against a legacy of corruption. O'Connell was appointed interim mayor in March 2018 after Democrat Ed Pawlowski was convicted on a slew of felony charges related to a play-to-play scheme. The crimes also entangled Redding's former city council president, Francis Acosta, and former mayor Vaughn Spencer, Democrats who were also convicted for their participation. Ramos also notes Democrat Enid Santiago, candidate for the state House seat that represents the city, is going up against her own party.
There's always racism on the Republican side, but you got Democrats going after Enid Santiago.
Santiago challenged Democrat and incumbent Representative Peter Schweier for the 22nd district seat in the June primary. Schweier won by only 55 votes, according to certified results.
The party is reaching out to my supporters, asking them to stop supporting me.
Not only was the election close, but it was also rife with accusations of negligence, polls opening late, and voters being denied their right to vote.
Last names. Many Latino voters have two last names. They were not putting the hyphen in the middle, so it was not showing up as if they were registered to vote. So they were simply turning them away.
Santiago alleges Judge of Elections Erica Bickford openly supported Schweier while working the polls and that she witnessed, along with an election official, Bickford tampering with ballots. Bickford says she darkened ballot selections of some voters and also trimmed a number of ballots. She now faces misdemeanor charges for altering around 30 ballots that day.
The other carries a fine not exceeding $500.
Lehigh County District Attorney James Martin says it's a unique case in his more than two decades as DA. Though Bickford faces possible jail time and fines, Martin says the issue may be resolved if she resigns.
Because I don't think she's equipped to do it. And if she were to do that, these charges could be disposed of in a diversionary program.
Martin notes his office did not find evidence Bickford changed any votes or created any fraudulent ballots. As an election judge, Bickford is an elected official and may oversee a polling place in November's election. Since the charges were filed, Santiago says public support for her among her party's leaders has remained non-existent.
So the Democratic Party has done nothing, nothing at all, to secure a fair election, to speak up on behalf of disenfranchised communities, to assure them that this would never happen again. The Democratic Party has been completely silent.
When her own party has not spoken up for her, others did.
I mean, I just kept on seeing Republicans showing up. And they were not showing up because they support Enid. They were showing up because we're talking voter suppression.
Despite the primary loss, Santiago is not backing down and has continued her campaign as a write-in candidate. She is the sole challenger to Schweier.
I understand that you can't just simply double the minimum wage because it would...
On his website, Schweier supports an increase, though not a doubling, of the state's $7.25 an hour minimum wage, reversing Allentown School District's budget cuts in recent years, and proposing a study of income inequality across the Commonwealth. Santiago characterizes herself a progressive Democrat who wants to implement criminal justice reform, $15 minimum wage, equal funding for public schools, and make housing a human right. Santiago says she knows a write-in campaign is an uphill battle, but is going to see the election through as a message to voters.
If this happened in Allentown, this is happening everywhere. However, nobody is speaking up. People are afraid, and those that are speaking up are being shut down by those that have a louder voice, which is why we need to unite these voices to make sure that we stop voter suppression on marginalized communities.
Both Republican Tim Ramos and Democrat Enid Santiago, on two different ends of the political spectrum, are calling on urban Black and Latino voters to challenge the status quo. They both say they are fighting for the people of Allentown, and part of that battle is overcoming their community's complacency with the Democrats in power in this general election.
If you've never been to Erie, chances are you'll be told to check out one place above all when you go, the coarse, sandy beaches that line the peninsula of Presque Isle. The several-mile-long strip of land acts as a barrier between Erie and its namesake lake, literally and figuratively. You could spend a whole week there and not know a thing about what's going on in the small city across the bay. But if you venture into town, to a place like its main park of Perry Square, you'll find a city that's itching to reinvent itself. To see what I mean, you have to venture out further from there, into some of Erie's neighborhoods. You'll hear things like this.
Like, most of the families that we work with live in poverty, and poverty is touching them in some way or another.
We've had a lot of problems within our local school district, a lot of funding issues. We've had to downsize quite a bit over the years.
There's
really a lack of food here, fresh food options, especially in my neighborhood.
Those people could all play a role in how Erie reinvents itself, and we'll meet them later. But first, Tina Mangine of the Erie County Redevelopment Authority has been studying the reasons why reinvention is so key here. The biggest is that the county is thought of as a Rust Belt area, long past its prime. Erie itself, home to around 96,000 people, is also home to the poorest zip code in America, according to census data. Household income in the county that surrounds it has lagged behind the state and country for years. Mangine says if that's all going to change, the two will have to rely on one another.
We're a little bit later to the game, but we know that we need to transform Erie to regain population, to create jobs, to redefine who we are.
One of the residents who's working toward that redefinition is Mabel Howard, director of the Bethany Outreach Center. When I go to meet her, she enlists me to help her put a bag of clothes together for a man who's come to the door.
We just need some pants.
Howard says the Outreach Center provides clothing, food, and literacy programs to hundreds of families. Between running two businesses and taking care of her own family, she's trying to make life a little easier for anyone that comes to her door by listening.
The only way to truly know what people need is to ask them what their needs are. So I might say that I want to give the community coats. Like, I just want the community to have coats, but it might be summer and they may be looking at me like, we don't need coats.
Every person Howard meets, she says, works hard to provide for themselves. But some find it tough to access things like education that can help break the cycle.
That does not work together. It's just having the opportunity and the barriers being reduced so that you have that opportunity.
Which is something people from all over the world, immigrants and refugees, have come to Erie for. They come to improve their surroundings and have helped improve Erie in turn. People like Devi Subedi, a Bhutanese New American, came here 2 decades ago after fleeing persecution in his home country.
Some people, they like in other city, they move other city, but it is one of our home now because we love it. We know all the people here. We know everything here.
Subedi also knows what's missing in Erie. He and others say the lack of a local community college makes staying in town tough for some.
Maybe the young generation who finished the school, who cannot pay the like a fee for the private school, they might be look the place where they have a community college and they move out.
The city says it's going to be getting a community college soon, hoping to offer it alongside the other universities in the area. In the meantime, Corey Cook is one of the people helping to redefine what opportunities the city's youth can access. He's a musician, father, and philanthropist who runs a nonprofit program called Life Through Music, teaching Erie's middle and high school kids the ins and outs of the industry.
We incorporate technology, playing virtual instruments, you know, recording our own music, mastering it, and those things to really give our kids the edge on 21st century musicianship.
Cook says he wants to help students reach their potential amid the education funding challenges Erie School District faces. In 2017, the district consolidated schools across the board, which Cook says worries the kids he works with even now.
They know, they understand that we have 20 kids in our classroom right now. If we go up to 50 kids in our classroom and one teacher, there's going to be a problem, and there's going to be more issues of disruption and everything else.
Cook points to decades of low investment in Erie's future as the cause and says it may take decades to reverse. Just a few blocks away from Cook, urban gardener Stephanie Siner is among those trying to make up for that lost time. I find her working in a plot next to her house.
And like, this is a planting of winter lettuce, so it's only, you know, like a week or two old, and then there's a red lettuce.
Siner came to Erie in 2016 as a member of the service group AmeriCorps. She says she noticed right away that many in Erie can't get to any of the grocery stores that lay miles outside the city center, a condition made worse by the pandemic.
And it became pretty clear that there was a greater desire to secure fresh food, make sure it would be available. And people were taking more time to cook and to think about their health and wellness.
So to help reinvent how fresh produce gets to neighborhoods in need, Siner started Wildfield Urban Farm, one of a few urban gardens scattered throughout the city. Siner says to address Erie's food insecurity fully, it'll take a lot of other things, like better public transit.
I think it needs to be a systemic thing, but what we're doing is what we can as like individuals who care about this and want to see it move forward.
Tina Mengine of the County Redevelopment Authority says she hopes all these efforts will point this region by the lake in the right direction.
The city, like in any area, is the heart and soul of a region or a county. So the City of Erie's revitalization is critical, I think, for the whole region.